yeah. Right out of the chute Monday morning. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Great stuff today. Eric Bowler from Media Matters next hour. Rude Pundit coming up. And Reverend Jim Wallace. Right over there in that chair, live in studio. Very, very exciting.
He's the awesome.
Author of the new book, On God's Side, What Religion Forgets and Politics Hasn't Learned About Serving the Common Good. Fabulous stuff, as usual. He will bless the studio.
That's right. He's a lot better than having Jimmy Swaggart in studio.
Right, right. Whew, I remember that.
Who booked that?
Wow.
Another edition of Who Booked That? Yeah.
Travis!
Travis!
Gladys!
All right. So, by the way, once again, another edition of I Am Always Right. Remember, I got some complaint calls last week. Zubeldot is a grieving mother. I think y'all are being mean about her.
Zubeldot.
Right.
Computer says no.
I like Zubeldot better.
I'm like something a little off about Zubeldot.
Yes.
It turns out I was correct about that. A lot of new, because she was on the terrorist watch list as well, as it turns out, had a role in.
I think she played a very strong role in his radicalization process. I do believe if she comes into the United States that she will be detained for questioning. I think there is a connection there.
Yeah. Well, and we thought it was just the stolen Lord and Taylor scarves that would prevent her from coming.
I remember during one of our trips early in the show, I wasn't allowed to get on the plane initially. There was like a no-fly thing.
Right.
Jim Ward, probably. But
Right. Probably with good cause.
So.
Well, like you, a 9/11 conspiracy theorist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Zubeldot is.
Zubeldot is, yes. And she has a theme already on the Stephanie Miller Show. Oh, this is catchy already.
A Zubeldot. A Zubeldot. A Zubeldot.
Wow. All right. That's some Marion Ann Arbor channeling, Louis Armstrong, something?
No, it's from Sesame Street. That was a song from Sesame Street.
It sounds a little... All right, that
Which
was fabulous.
Which I first
Thank
saw
you.
In German, in Germany.
You
and
said,
that
really?
Was like, wow. The first episode I saw. In there. Huh.
I didn't think we would ever rival Abbottabod, but apparently we have a new theme.
Abbottabod. Abbottabod.
Different key. Yeah.
Abbottabod.
Yeah. I got into it with a caller last week, remember? I'm like, do I have the same sympathy for her as the mom whose 8-year-old was blown up?
No.
No. Not really.
Not really.
A little bit of a parenting issue, perhaps. I'm just saying, when you raise two terrorist bombers, I don't know. Just saying. Don't know what. But anyway, a lot of new stuff coming out about, Well, here's the other thing that obviously Russia failed to share with us exactly the information about.
Thanks, Russia.
Thanks, Russia. Because we.
Don't tell the Americans about this.
Because, of course, I got
something brewing. Don't worry about it.
But because there can be some Obama bashing in it, a lot of Republicans are like, oh, the FBI bungled it. It's like, well, maybe part of why they bungled it is we didn't hear about these phone conversations with her son where they allegedly discussed jihad. So that might have been some, now a warning that doesn't include.
Now a warning?
Why you were warning us? Just saying. All right, would you like the not-so-fun fact?
Sure.
First of all, did you see the photos of her as Grace Slick?
Oh,
what's
yeah.
that all about?
Damn.
I was trying to think. Early
makes
Pat
you
Benatar?
Larger.
No, more Grace
Ron
Slick.
Ron Peele blows things up.
Pat Benatar if she hadn't waxed her eyebrows.
Right, exactly. Zoinks. And I said Grace Slick, and then Rocky Mountain Mike wrote me and thought the same thing. I'm like, Yeah, photos of her as a younger woman.
Like late 70s Grace
Slick. Zubeldot. Pardon?
Late 70s Grace Slick.
Starship.
Right, right.
Yeah, Jefferson Starship, before they became Starship.
Right. People, in my early rock and roll DJ days, people used to say I looked like Grace Slick, and I'm like, thanks, what is she, like 90?
Well, now she is.
Right.
She wasn't then.
She's always been older than me, is
yes.
what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm like, I look like Grace Slick. Yeah, I had some unfortunate, who didn't have unfortunate 80s hair, really? But mine was...
Oh, I had a zipper head and a mullet.
Yeah, mine was, whew, unfortunate.
Yeah.
In photos of her as a younger woman, Zubeldot.
Zubeldot.
Wears a low-cut blouse.
Sarnaevna.
Right. And had her hair teased like an 80s rock star.
She did.
We're going with Grace Slick.
Yep.
After she arrived in the U.S. from Russia in 2002, she went to beauty school and did facials at a suburban day spa.
Mm-hmm.
In recent years, people noticed a change, though. She began wearing a headscarf and decided...
Hijab.
Right. And cited, that's why I went with headscarf, because I was afraid that I would not pronounce it exactly correctly for you. So I went with headscarf.
You're thinking of a boxing move, a high jab.
Right, yeah, no.
That's an uppercut. Hijab. That's
right, no.
Jab beat.
In recent years, yes, she began wearing the headscarf and cited conspiracy theories about 9/11.
Well...
Being a plot against Muslims.
Well, no, that's not true.
Even a stop 4 o'clock is
right twice a day.
That's why it's dangerous to traffic in conspiracy theories, in my opinion.
Because then you end up on terrorist watch lists.
Right.
Sure. Jim Ward.
And you can't get on a trip to Columbus to do a radio show because you're...
Buildings were specifically designed to withstand the impact of airliners. And just because Thurbank was found in all three buildings.
At a party?
And
he'd be the one in the corner with Zuby Dot.
Every one of them fell down in
whipping
its own footprint at
three-ball
speed, which has never, ever, 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 ever happened by accident.
This is what it was like being in the elevator with him and Orly Tate after she was live in studio with us.
Oh,
I was
God.
Like, oh, no, really? They have some things in common.
I bet you Orly
Tate. There was some magical bonding.
Yes,
I'll bet
all conspiracy theories are exactly alike.
I bet you Orly
you can
Tate can't fly to Columbus.
You can believe everything that's on the TV. It's the TV. It must be true.
Yeah, that's what she said about, ask Tamerlan. It's on the internet.
Sure. It was a brown-skinned Arab man who was in custody, according to John King. It was on the TV. It must be true.
Okay, let's move on. Sarnyev is drawing increased attention after federal officials say Russian authorities intercepted her phone calls, including one in which she vaguely discussed jihad. How can you vaguely discuss? Jihad's pretty specific.
That, yeah.
What, jihad-ish?
A jihad-like substance?
We should do some hijad, if you know what I'm saying.
Ipsne, on the... She was speaking pig Latin, perhaps.
Ihadje. Nay.
Ipsne, on the... Conversation, K, about the E-H-J with her elder son, Tam.
Tam O'Shanter.
Oh, by the way,
he's Scottish.
Our fondest dream has already expired. Apparently, they are not coming. There will be no weekend at Tam's.
No.
Because they were going to come get his body and
now
presumably take him water skiing.
And nobody has claimed the body yet.
No.
So what
no.
is going on
no,
with
neither.
Said body?
So... For now, no weekend with Tamerlan. Stop being lazy! I teach you better than that! I am mother! Don't forget to turn!
You're not being sensitive.
No, I'm being insensitive to the terrorist mom, who's also on the terrorist watch list.
Should have given him some water wings, at least.
See? Jim, help her.
Thank you, Jim. That'll get you back off the terrorist watch
sure,
list.
Sure, just get back on magically. Thank God we don't do the show on the road anymore. Okay. In another phone conversation, she was recorded talking to someone in southern Russia who is under FBI investigation in an unrelated case. Zubidot, very chatty. Very, very,
very
chatty.
She loves the phone. She's like
uh-huh.
a teenager.
She told the Associated Press in Dagestan, it's all lies and hypocrisy. Don't know. I'm
and
sick of
I was all like, and then he was all like, and I went... I know, right?
Lying on her stomach on the bed, twisting the phone cord around her toe.
Maybe she'll blame autocorrect.
Yeah.
Your text discovered. I found a new website this weekend. Damn you, autocorrect.
Oh,
we have to post a link to it. It's hilarious. The ones that you top 10 misunderstandings between parents and kids.
Yeah. We posted hilarious. A link to that site 2 years ago, Steph.
Okay. This is a new one
okay.
with the top 10 misunderstandings right. between parents and kids.
Okay.
It's hilarious. Okay.
Yeah, I love that you just discovered
damn
you,
autocorrect. I did not say jihad. she'll just blame Siri. That's not what I said. All lies.
Recalculating.
Anyway, she said, I'm sick and tired of all this nonsense that they make up about me and my children. People know me as a regular person, and I've never been mixed up in any criminal intentions, especially any link to terrorism. Oh, you know what that is. That's an exception for the Lord and Taylor arrest.
Yeah.
I've never been mixed up in any criminal intentions. Did I steal a bunch of crap from Lord and Taylor? Yes. I love that she just made it like it was just like a little, like,
yeah.
you know, a little, you know, there was a little exception there, especially any link to terrorism.
Except for the whole talking about
stealing,
E-Hod-J.
Stealing stuff from Lord and Taylor, that's not, it was not a terrorist kind of a scarf. It was just a whatever. Okay. Amid the scrutiny of Siarnyelv and her ex-husband, Anzor.
Beldar.
Right.
Primat.
Say they have put off the idea of any trip to the U.S. to reclaim their elder son's body or try to visit Johar.
Have you noticed Johar that the father, has sunglasses just like the Unabombers?
Well, we're not saying there's any connection.
No, not at all.
No. Siarnyelv told the Associated Press on Sunday he was too ill to travel. Oh, well, that's new.
That's convenient.
And as we mentioned, Zubidat faces a 2012 shoplifting charge in a Boston suburb. All right. So this is what all right-wing radio was screaming about, although I have to say in this case I'm a little down with it.
Yeah.
With four children, they qualified for food stamps and were on and off public assistance benefits for years.
Yeah.
Well, that part, a little bit. It's a fancy bit annoying. Okay.
Thanks for the checks. Here's a bomb.
Yes, why don't you get us? Okay. Zubidat, I'm not done.
Oh, well, fine.
Zubidat said she and Tamerlan began to turn more deeply into their Muslim faith about 5 years ago after being influenced, here he is again, by Misha.
Misha, have we discovered who Misha is yet?
Yes, apparently the FBI has, but we still do not have a last name. The man whose full name she won't reveal, because no one ever does,
because she's,
the Russian character never has a last name.
But his real name is Hiram Feldstein.
I highly doubt that.
Misha's real name is not Hiram Feldstein.
Saul Glickstein.
Timish McTavish.
Sid Flagelman.
Yes.
From Boca. It's not who it is.
No.
Liam O'Reilly.
Most definitely not any of those.
No. Anyway,
Matsushita.
Zubidat would not reveal Misha's real name or full name.
Because why would she?
Whatever.
Something. Anyway. But he had a religious devotion that was far greater than her own, even though he was an ethnic Armenian who converted to Islam.
Wow.
Well, I'm willing to bet her.
Misha's
last name has an IAN at the end. I think we can narrow it down.
Yes.
Anyway, my point is, I'm telling you right now, someone is writing a sequel to Foul Play starring Goldie Hawn and Chevy Chase right as we speak.
And, well, not Dudley Moore because he's no longer
with us. Is Misha an albino, I wonder?
Could be.
Okay.
No, he has a red beard, doesn't he?
That's right. No, he looks more like Yukon Cornelius of the Christmas special, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Nothing.
I'm telling you, there's not nothing. There is silver and gold in a Foul Play remake at this particular point.
Have we checked the Rankin Bass archives of puppets? Maybe Misha is there.
All right, part two.
One of our puppets is missing.
Of the new Zubidat fun facts as we continue. 19 minutes after the hour, the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's fun for ages 8 to 80. Join us.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 23 minutes after the hour. The Rude Pundit coming up at the bottom of the hour. Some great stuff on the George W. Bush Library.
Yes.
Very, very exciting last week. He calls it the Whitewashatorium. All right. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. These are more Zubidat fun facts and such. As we were talking about the latest out of
Zubidat.
Boston case. I know. That'll stick in your head all day. I'm going to get a lot of thanks a lot letters. Okay. So we were talking about some friends and people that got facials from her. Okay.
Forget. No, that's not.
Yeah,
Okay. So we're talking about her getting radicalized. She obviously, the news came out over the weekend that she was also on the terrorist watch list along with her adorable son Tam. Okay. She left her job at a day spa and started giving facials in her apartment. Oh, boy. Zubidat here? It's time for my facial. Can you do something about these pores? One client, Alyssa Kilzer, noticed the change when Siarnyelv put a headscarf on before leaving the apartment. She had never worn a hijab. Am I saying it right?
Hijab.
Right. at working at the spa previously or inside the house, I was really surprised. She started to refuse to see boys that had gone through puberty. Are there a lot of...
What?
For facials, I guess.
Boys?
How many boys get facials?
Well,
not many.
No, they might because of acne problems.
Oh, I see. Well,
yeah.
She wouldn't take them.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, once they grew hair, that was it. They were out. As she had consulted a religious figure, Misha, and he had told her it was sacrilegious, she was often fasting. Well, no wonder she's so cranky.
Of course.
Really?
That explains everything.
Grace Slick never fasted.
Yes, she did have Grace Slick's hair.
Yes.
But she had left behind her former one rock and roll lifestyle.
Yes. Makes you larger.
To embrace Islam. Okay. The woman interviewed stopped visiting the family's home for spa treatments in late 2011 or 2012 when during one session, Zubidat started quoting a conspiracy theory telling me she thought that 9/11 was purposely created by the American government to make America hate Muslims.
Well,
it's real, Sarniyev said. My son knows all about it. You can read it on the internet. Here's the rub about this whole, because we're talking, you know, obviously people are like, oh, the FBI bungled this, yada, yada. But the vague warning from the Russians that Tamerlan, an amateur boxer in the U.S., was a follower of radical Islam who had changed drastically since 2010, that led the FBI to interview Tamerlan at the family's home in Cambridge. Officials ultimately placed his name and his mother's name on various watch lists, but the inquiry was closed in late spring of 2011. So it's the phone conversations that Russia didn't tell the FBI about.
Right.
Interesting rub about all this, though. The conversations are significant because had they been revealed earlier, they might have been enough evidence for the FBI to initiate a more thorough investigation of the Sarniyev family. Anzor's brother believed his former sister-in-law had a big-time influence on her older son's growing embrace of his Muslim faith and decision to quit boxing and school. While Tamerlan was living in Russia for 6 months in 2012, Zubidat, who had remained in the U.S., was arrested at a shopping mall in the suburb of Natick, Massachusetts.
Natick.
And accused of trying to shoplift $1,624 worth of women's clothing from a department store.
Wow, that would be at the North Shore Mall. Wow.
That's a lot of...
Yeah,
stuff.
That is a lot of stuff.
That's like Winona Ryder, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, the sled in you know, in the Grinch kind of amount of stuff.
Actually, she looks a little bit like Winona Ryder.
That's what Winona Ryder looked like in the shoplifting video. Max, the dog in the sled. Like, really? Did you really think you're going to walk out of there with that much crap? She failed to appear in court to answer the charges that fall and instead left the country. I must go now. So that's the
lady. I have a thing with guy.
Anyway, but the thing they're talking about, the reason why the FBI may not have taken it, first of all, Russia didn't share some of the information, but is because apparently they frequently ask the FBI to investigate Chechens because they obviously have had this ongoing war with them. And so that was...
And that's just not something that we kind of want to... get involved with. So.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm reading from the Daily Beast. One source of the FBI's mistrust is the perception that Russians have tried to get them to spy on the Russian exile community in the U.S. under the guise of legitimate law enforcement.
Right.
The FSB would have been particularly interested in Tamerlan because of his Chechen heritage. Obviously, the Russians have fought two vicious wars with the predominantly Muslim Chechnya, which has sought to break away as a separate state. A U.S. official said the FSB placed as many as 100 requests with the FBI for investigations into Chechens living in the United States between 2010 and 2012, and few of any of them panned out.
Right.
So, and again, you know, as the investigation continues, that's part of the larger picture of why what happened might have happened. They're describing it. The relationship between the U.S. and Russia has been especially fraught when it comes to cooperating on law enforcement and intelligence matters. One reason is the FBI may not have probed more aggressively. Russia didn't want to share its methods for intelligence gathering and all of that for fear of revealing their sources. So, but it might have been helpful, just saying, if they had mentioned the phone conversations where the jihad was discussed. Just saying. I'm just disappointed. Disappointed in you, Russia. 29 minutes after the hour.
Disappointed!
Thank you. Rude Pundit next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Fantastic!
Stephanie Miller.
You are the kind this network cannot get enough of.
Yes, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Monday, you know what that
is. Lee Poppet, the rude pundit. Pundit.
Good morning, Papa.
Good morning.
How are
you? I actually wanted to give you a bit of news.
What? Oh, what's happening?
Well, they did find Misha.
I know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I love the this piece. They said when they first his name appeared.
Yeah.
They said it didn't seem like it should be hard to find him. How many balding, red bearded Armenian Muslim converts live in the Boston area? what about him?
Well, he said that the FBI is pretty much done with him.
Yeah.
That there's nothing. He's like, what the hell? Why are you all looking at me?
There's right. No there there.
Right.
Yeah.
WTF.
Yeah.
I love that because I got all overexcited by the headline, Misha Speaks. I was like, what?
Yep. Misha Speaks. Misha said, I've been cooperating.
I think what he said is, I'm pretty tired now. I think I'll go home and take a nap.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm pretty tired. Think I'll go home now.
Yes.
Yeah, and that his family is like, we love America. Come on.
Obviously a southern Armenian accent.
It's like, yeah. Yeah. It's like, guys.
Yeah. Well, he's slow, just getting used to the language.
So, lovely review, as I was saying, about the George W. Bush Presidential Library and Whitewashatorium of Wonders is what you call it. I love you say it actually forcing us to look backward and think, oh, shucks, that dumb kicker wannabe was just doing the best his little old brain can do. He didn't mean to set the nation on a path to imminent doom.
John Stewart calls it the Hard Rock Cafe of catastrophic policy decisions.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I also said the abattoir of history.
Yes, yes.
It's just, I mean, did you just sit there last week just with like your mouth open going, do we really have that short a memory here? You know?
Yeah.
I thought when he broke down crying for just a minute,
yeah.
I thought, yeah, cry, you bastard, cry.
We were crying for 8 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You also, as only you can tell it, you say truly it's like creating a library to a gorilla that wasn't quite as gentle or articulate as Coco. Look, here's a pile of kitten corpses that petted to death, but damn, wasn't it adorable to watch them together briefly? And at least it could use sign language to say, me throw poop now. You might have to duck, but don't say you weren't warned. We did not get a similar warning about the Bush presidency, did we?
Well, I think in the re-election that we had our warning, yeah. and we still, you know, elected him. So,
re-election in quotation marks.
Yes, yes.
For those of you that have not gotten to a visit or have no intention of visiting the library, here's some the rude pundit, and we'll take you through it. I'll just some festive music.
Okay.
George W. Bush Library, the building itself, you say, shaped like a giant hand with a middle finger thrusting out, obviously pointing towards the heaven where the former president found the strength to deal with the many crises of that he created during his two terms in office.
Yep. Yeah. I don't think it was Frank Gehry. It'd have had a little more curve to it.
Right. And then you say the statues out front of drunken sisters Barbara and Jenna welcome you inside, because indeed, what is life but a party?
You know, they were really our hostesses through those years, if you think about it. Just if you just stay blind drunk, you won't have to think about it.
Are the statues of them passed out with like their skirts over their head? Just
yep. Yeah. Secret Service trying to get the pot away before anybody finds it.
Secret Service holding their hair back.
Yeah.
All the puke. Yeah.
Wondering how many years did I go through training for this?
Right. You say the first space is the how the did this guy become president room, and it deals with Bush's early years. Exhibits include the megaphone Bush used as a school cheerleader, a pile of cocaine, and bottles and bottles of tequila, and of course a wrecked car or two. I think you're making up that part of the exhibit.
Well, no, Laura Bush had the wrecked car.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
with the boyfriend hood ornament.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
boyfriend attached to the axle.
But George had the drunk driving charge. So
yeah, right. That's true.
Yeah.
Right. You'll learn how Bush succeeded in scoring nearly every business he ever came near. Then we go into the next room, lets you have fun recounting ballots from Florida. What kind of mark is that? How's that Chad hanging? You get to figure it out. Be careful, though. You have a timer on you, and before you're done, rowdy GOP operatives will appear on a screen to distract you, and an animatronic William Rehnquist comes in rushing in to put an end to it.
Rehnquist.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah, well, you know, I like the interactive exhibits. I think that they really capture the feeling of panic and nausea that we had for 8 years.
You know, you make a really good point on gun safety in terms of the whole Boston case. You say, wrap your head around this. Boston bomber Tamerlan Sarnoff, a.k.a. the dead one, was on the terrorist watch list, and that fact alone wouldn't have stopped him at all from legally buying any gun he wanted. It wouldn't have even slowed him down. You can be forced to leap through hoops and have your anus probed in order to board a plane, but being on the list that's supposed to, you know, give us the illusion of safety cannot, by law, be used to even slow someone down if he or she wants an AR-15.
Isn't that just one of the most mind-blowing things?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where you sit there and wonder, does the NRA just hate us? You know, at this point, the logic behind that is just stunning to me, that there are so many activities that you can be stopped for just by being on this list, but this one thing, no, you're cool.
Yeah.
Go buy a gun.
Yeah. You, by the way, as you tend to do, you fancy professors, you dug in and found some statistics which are a little bit terrifying. You say between 2004 and 2010, people on terrorism watch lists tried to buy guns and explosives more than 1,400 times. They succeeded in more than 90% of those cases, or 1,321 times. Are you cool with this, average gun owner, you ask? I mean, that's pretty terrifying.
It is. And, you know, this is not to say that, you know, there's not flaws in the terrorist watch lists, you know, that it is accusing people of a crime that they probably haven't committed. But if you're going to have them, at least, you know, say, well, maybe they shouldn't have guns, or maybe we should take an extra close look at them before they get guns.
Yeah.
You know, and I love with the whole background check thing, you know, you hear from gun nuts all the time saying, well, why don't they prosecute any of the 40,000 people declined from getting guns? And it's because most of the time people don't know that there's something in their background when they go. That's why there's a background check, you know. It's not so that we can arrest everyone that applies and gets declined.
Yeah.
It's just a stupid talking point that they've gotten now.
Well, it's just their paranoia. They assume the government's out to get you. So,
right. But yet in that case, they want the government to come and get you because somehow you've offended good law-abiding gun owners by daring to apply to get a permit to buy a gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You say the media is filled with articles and reports, introspective and knee-jerk about what could have been done to prevent the bombing or what can we do to prevent future attacks. You say none of these ideas involve preventing people from having easy access to weapons and explosives. And again, you know, that was the other thing that came out during this investigation, that, you know, at least this cop may have still been alive if they'd been allowed to trace explosives, which the NRA made sure they couldn't.
Yep, they were not allowed to put any tracers into fertilizers or gunpowder,
right,
that would allow them to trace where they got it and who bought it.
You know, it's interesting. This is an article in the Daily Beast today. It says, false flags, Sharia law, gun grabs, GOP lawmakers embrace the crazy. But they're talking about how they really are increasingly embracing these crazy conspiracy theories, but it's affecting policy. It's why background checks didn't pass, because of National Registry, Hitler, blah, right?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we keep...
It's called the Hitler streak.
What's funny is...
Because of the Hitler clause. Yeah.
We keep thinking we've hit some kind of tipping point where it's like, oh, they can't get any crazier, and yet there they are, you know, that they're scrawling on the wall with their own feces, and we're thinking, oh, come on, it can't get any worse than this. Yeah. And, you know, what's next? I'm waiting for the cannibalism.
Yeah. All right, as are we. Eat up, everybody. All right, rudeness, great stuff as usual. We'll talk to you next week, honey.
All righty, bye.
All right, there he goes, the rudeness. All right, this, we have to play this. We'll post a link to it on our Facebook page. But because this gun stuff, it really has gotten so insane when you look at it. I mean, the points Rude just made. But everybody's been talking about this. Heather Wally is her name. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm saying it
Whaley.
Right. Right, but she's with the, you know, moms. Moms that don't want you know, everyone to be able to have a gun to shoot their kids. I don't know what the name. I got to find the actual name of her her group. But anyway, as a lot of our friends did, called a bunch of the senators after this disgusting gun vote.
Yeah.
She apparently got a lot of machines. And remember, we had Melissa Fitzgerald in last week, and she did this, and then she finally got through to Saxby Chambliss's office. So this is what happened. She mostly got machines, and then she got bored.
Yep.
By the time she got to Senator Bob Corker's office, who also voted against background checks.
Right. But someone actually answered at Corker's office.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And so she was bored, and her kids were at home, and she decided, you know, because they thought it was hilarious, like it was a prank call. But this is her on the phone.
Your county in Tennessee for my records, please.
I'm in Bristol.
Okay, thank you.
And I would like to tell Senator Corker that on behalf of all mentally ill individuals in America, I want to thank him for protecting my Second Amendment rights.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I'll certainly let Senator Corker know that message
can,
for you.
Can you repeat it for me, please?
That on behalf of yourself and the mentally ill people of America, you would like to thank the senator for supporting your rights.
Yes, and can you add that just because I have been deemed by a court to be a dangerous, paranoid schizophrenic doesn't mean that I shouldn't have the right to buy more guns. Don't you agree?
I can certainly let Senator Corker know your message for you.
But do you agree? Don't you?
I will let Senator Corker know that for you. I'm just here to reflect his views, not my personal views.
Well, that's his views, right? He supports my rights as a paranoid schizophrenic to not have to suffer the indignation of being turned away from a background check.
Yes, ma'am. I'll let him know that for you.
Do you can you tell me if he agrees with me?
His vote does reflect that.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Finally.
Rock on, sister.
She's awesome.
She's at the top of my future wife list.
I think she's married and has children.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, she said most of the calls just went to voicemail. By the time I got to Corker, I was bored telling them how shameful the vote was. And my kids were home, and they were getting a kick out of their mom making what they interpreted as prank calls.
Yeah.
Moms Demand Actions for Gun Sense in America is the name of her group. She sort of took a unique approach.
Yep.
She's, you know, the first however many calls, she just said that, but that's awesome. And then it went all over the YouTubes and the interwebs. It's a perfect... The skit. Okay, 45 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is too weird, man.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Fifty minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2. Eric Boulder to Media Matters coming up after the top of the hour. All right, Misha speaks. They finally found Misha, and he said,
"I'm pretty tired.
Yep.
I think I'll go home now."
Again, he's obviously from southern Armenia.
Yes.
As Yukon Cornelius would say, we got nothing from him, apparently. I love the way this story reads. The New York Review of Books said it has found the mysterious Misha. What?
Why would the New York Review of Books have found him?
Right, it's like they're our top investigative agency.
Wow.
Hello, New York Review of Books, Misha. Okay, so he says he is no Svengali. Oh, boy, there is a last name. As if I wasn't having a hard enough time.
It ends in IAN, doesn't it?
His name is Mikhail Alahargadov.
Oh.
I don't know, Jimmy. You try it. Alahargadov.
Alahargadov?
Sure. That's pretty close.
I'd have to look at it.
Let's just go with Misha.
Misha.
Let's go back to Misha. Yeah. When Zahar and Tamerlan, when the family members started mentioning a mysterious man named Misha, suggesting he was the driving force behind Tamerlan's descent into radical, violent Islam, and as I was saying to Rude Pundit, they say it shouldn't be too hard to find him. How many balding, red-bearded Armenian Muslim converts live in Boston?
Well, red beards might not be uncommon, but...
The FBI over the weekend identified Misha, but found he had no ties to terrorism generally or to the Boston bombing specifically. This is the New York Review of Books.
Sure. Great. The investigative
Jessica,
minds
right,
over there.
The Jessica Fletcher, obviously.
FBI, CIA, NRB.
Book review.
Yeah, whatever.
Are you talking that whenever the New York Times Review of Books shows up, someone dies?
Apparently.
Like Jessica Fletcher?
Accidents happen. Bones break. they write, today
Dick
I was...
Van Dyke makes a cameo.
Today, I was able to meet Misha, whose real name is Mikhail Alavergadov. I found him at his home in Rhode Island. Oh, well, that's tricky. He moved to Rhode Island.
Ah.
In a lower middle class neighborhood where he lives in a modest, tiny, tidy apartment with his elderly parents. Oh, dear. He confirmed that he was a convert to Islam and that he has known Tamerlan, but flatly denied any part in the bombings. He said, I wasn't his teacher. If I had been his teacher, I would have made sure he never did anything like this. He's a 39-year-old man of Armenian-Ukrainian descent. He's of medium height and has a thin, reddish-blonde beard. He said he knew Tamerlan in Boston, where he lived until about 3 years ago, and has not had any contact with him since. So the plot thickens.
So he's part Ukrainian, hence Slavic name.
Right. Representative Michael McCall of the House Homeland Security Committee.
The way they handle these devices and the tradecraft leads me to believe that there was a trainer. And the question is, where are, is that trainer or trainers?
Well, you know, interesting. Daily Beast has an interesting article about the Awolaki tie.
Yes.
Iron off. When will the story be over? Shokhar Tsarnaev has told investigators he and his brother were influenced by the internet sermons of notorious preacher Anwar al-Awlaki. Anyway, so that's the preacher that influenced. And by the way, drone got him. Just saying.
Kaboom.
Just saying. Right. Exactly. During his hospital room interrogation, Johar told FBI agents he and his brother were influenced by the internet sermons of Anwar al-Awlaki, the American born preacher who was killed in a U.S. drone strike in Yemen in 2011. Just saying.
Sure.
Good for that drone, all I'm saying.
Drones have their place.
Mm-hmm. There has been speculation about Misha. They were talking about this, if he was the one that radicalized him, but that's what they're, it looks more like it was al-Awlaki. Did I say that right? We do know there's a long trail of hardened terrorists, Daily Beast writes, who have acknowledged coming under his sway. The Times Square bomber and the Nadel Hassan, the U.S. Army officer, the Fort Hood shooter,
right,
both said they were radicalized by, and he personally supervised the 2009 Christmas Day bombing attempt by the so-called underwear bomber. It's because of him we have to take everything off at the airport.
Thanks.
It's a lot of work for someone of my age to not get sex. Really? I got to take a lot. If I take that much stuff off, I want something, but
well,
no.
Well, what bothers me about that is that you're walking around barefoot on
ground
that other people have walked barefoot
on. Ugh.
It's like a locker room over by TSA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Johar has admitted to the FBI he and his brother learned how to build the pressure cooker bombs from the Al-Qaeda internet magazine website Inspire. That was run by Samir Khan, an American propagandist for al-Qaeda, with close ties to al-Awlaki, and he was ultimately killed in the same U.S. drone strike that killed al-Awlaki. Again, a two for one. That was just, I'm just saying, good drones, bad drones.
Yeah.
Good drone.
Of course, we don't know how many.
That's my new book.
Innocent civilians were killed in the process.
Oh, really? And we shouldn't have gotten those two guys? Those two guys.
I cannot hear you.
You're not glad we got those two guys?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I'm just saying that there's collateral damage.
Yes, sometimes, and I'm not saying that that's not a concern.
I'm not arguing with you about that.
All right.
Oh,
boy.
As I mentioned, it's part of what happened here, as we talked about earlier, is the cooperation between the U.S. and Russia, and they describe the relationship as fraught on law enforcement and intelligence matters.
Right.
One reason the FBI may not have probed more aggressively, according to a U.S. official, is that the Russians never revealed the basis for their suspicions. U.S. investigators assume the FSB had intercepted worrisome things Tamerlan might have said over the phone or emails. Suspected radicals they had under surveillance in Russia, but the Russians would have been loath to disclose what they had picked up for fear of revealing their sources and methods to a foreign intelligence service. And then there's also the Chechen part of it that we talked about, that sometimes the FBI is suspicious because Russia wants them to, you know, basically spy on any Chechens living here just for their political reasons and not because there's any legitimate concern. So anyway,
congratulations for not saying loath to disclose.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Representative Mike Rogers on the House Intelligence Committee.
There are still persons of interest in the United States that the FBI would like to have conversations with.
Yeah. Well, then. Okay.
Just a little conversation.
And apparently this is news to me, but there is a representative called Dutch Ruppersberger.
From Maryland. He's a Democrat.
Right. Ruppersberger.
The real test of whether he was radicalized or not, or where he was radicalized, is Russia. And we have to do a lot of investigation in Russia, because when he went over to Russia and then came back, things changed.
Ruppelsberger. Ruppelsberger.
He's on our side.
I know. I just heard of him before.
Okay.
All right. All right, so Eric Bollert with a lot of great stuff on the Boston case and much more. By the way, I forgot to mention, this hour has been brought to you by TheraBreath mouthwash and toothpaste. Mm. Nothing works faster and lasts longer at knocking out bad breath than TheraBreath. TheraBreath mouthwash and toothpaste available at Target, Walmart, Walgreens, and other fine stores.
Yes, I love that stuff.
Well, I know a lot of people were saying, who brought us this fine hour that we've enjoyed so much? One of our finest first hours ever.
So many people wrote cards and letters
TheraBreath.
Asking.
Thank you, TheraBreath. All right, 58 minutes after the hour. Right back with Eric Bollert on The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere, stephaniemiller.com. Check it out. The Reverend Jim Wallace, live in studio with us next hour. Very exciting. Never had him live in studio.
Love
him. Has a brand new book out. All right. And guess what? It's Monday, so you know. Eric Bollert from Media Matters for America, doing the Lord's work as usual.
Eric Bollert.
Come on, baby.
Eric Bollert.
Let's dive into the right-wing world.
I don't know what that means.
Eric Bollert from Media Matters, whom we love.
Bollert.
Good morning, Eric Bollert.
Morning.
I love your tweet. You said, great, only 13 years too late. Justice O'Connor questions whether the Supreme Court should have decided Bush v. Gore.
And it's going, I'm seeing lots of tweets about that this morning, too, so I think the Chicago Tribune picked it up as well. But, yeah, that was late last week.
Yeah, thanks, Sandy. We just want to say
now a warning.
Thanks.
And you know, it really was one of the most painful political events ever. And so now, when you think about, look at what you know the previous 13 years could have been like. You know, and then you go down that road, and you have to stop after like 2 minutes, and you're like Iraq War, climate change, and it's just like, thanks. But you know,
Taylor Swift. I knew he was trouble when he walked in. Sandra Day O'Connor did not. But, yeah, it is amazing. We were just talking to Rude Pundit, who calls the library the whitewashatorium.
mean. and Sandra Day O'Connor and others on the court, I think, have come to the clear realization of the extraordinary damage that did to the court's reputation.
Yeah.
I mean, up until that point, we've seen other erosion since, I think, in public confidence, and there's an assumption now that you don't really know what the Supreme Court's going to do because you have to factor in the politics. And everyone growing up always knew, you know, through the civil rights rulings, the Watergate warnings, rulings and everything, everyone always knew Supreme Court just played it straight and they flushed that all down the toilet.
Yep.
With Bush v. Gore.
You spend your Sundays the same way I do, and that is largely being irritated by Meet the Press. You say, Meet the Press invites four guests, only one is a Democrat. I always think, geez, the balance off here. And I'm like, yes, it is.
Right, and then, the producer tweeted me and said, oh, you got, you know, we have Democrats on here and you know, et cetera, but they were hyping their Sunday lineup with four guests, and three of them were Republican, and there was only one Democrat. And so the breaking news last week out of Syria was about WMDs.
Right.
So who does Meet the Press interview exclusively, just one person to talk about WMDs? When there's a Democrat in the White House, they interview a Republican, John McCain.
Yeah,
how many breaking WMD stories during the Bush years did the Meet the Press automatically invite a Democrat and only a Democrat to talk about?
I was watching with a friend, and the minute he came on screen, I'm like, oh, how'd they get that booking? Look, it's the senator from the green room, John McCain. I mean, it's just, I know.
It's a running joke at this point, and I guess they're not in on the joke, or they have some reason why this failed presidential candidate has to be on every Sunday. Everyone else just sort of shakes their head.
And you wrote a great piece, as usual, in the wake of the whole Boston case. You tweeted, ongoing right-wing extremist violence of no concern. Shorter Fox News version, it's only terrorism if it's done by a Muslim. You also, a statistic here, 56% of domestic terrorist attacks and plots in the U.S. since 1995 have been perpetrated by right-wing extremists. And it's odd that Fox News would miss that story.
Yeah, it's interesting, it's particularly if you go to the Southern Poverty Law Center. You're not even aware of just really the constant arrests and the constant threats and the actual acts of violence, you know, militia with stockpiling guns, threatening to blow up buildings, threatening to kill judges, killing people. There was a famous case in Georgia a couple of years ago. There was this active military militia group, and they're active reformer now, and they killed one of their old members because they were afraid he was going to rat them out because they had big plans on waging war against the government. There was a bomber, would-be bomber, who was arrested in Washington because he was going to set off bombs on an MLK parade route. Threats against the president. So it's not really covered, and it's certainly not covered on Fox. There is a steady drumbeat of right-wing violence or threats of right-wing violence, and if you include that, the abortion firebombings and the abortion attack on abortion clinics, women's health clinics, it's constant. A, Fox News doesn't cover it, and B, they certainly don't assign collective blame.
You specifically highlighted the case, which is interesting. Wade Michael Page, guy that pulled up outside the Sikh temple in Wisconsin, right, and started killing worshippers, took out a pistol.
Killed six people, yeah.
Right. You say he was a 40-year-old, hated blacks, Indians, Native Americans, Hispanics. He called non-whites dirt people. He was interested in joining the Ku Klux Klan, immersed in the world of white power music. His band rehearsed in front of the Nazi flag. And you were saying, note that back in August 2012, Fox News didn't care very much about Wade Page.
It clearly, a form of domestic terror, whether it met the specific, law enforcement definition, he pulls up outside this temple and just starts mowing people down with a semi-automatic pistol and eventually killed himself. But was it so on primetime on Fox, I went back and looked, basically no discussion of it, a couple passing references. But then on the Fox show The Five, they were actually complaining. One of the hosts says, Andrea Tantoro, she says, how do you stop a lunatic? You know, this is not a political issue. So it's interesting when people go on shooting rampages, or specifically right-wing nuts, extremists go on shooting rampages, the response is, how do you possibly stop a lunatic? When a Muslim on Fox, is accused of an act of terror, Fox News definitely knows how you're supposed to stop that lunatic, and they're definitely interested in assigning political blame. So they have two completely standards they use and two completely programming choices they use. One, shooters are almost always isolated nuts, and there's nothing you can do. Remember after Sandy Hook?
Yeah.
When there's
the
discussion of gun control? There's nothing you can do. You can't pass any law.
Right.
The FBI can't stop these people.
Yeah.
But when a Muslim sets off a bomb, Fox News knows exactly how those people should have been stopped, and they're demanding the government start passing new laws.
By the way, that was the only thing that saved my my Sunday and my Meet the Press is Keith Ellison, who was great. Did you see that he debated Peter King? But this is, that's part of the same thing you're talking about, Eric. That Peter King is one of those that all Muslims suddenly are must be profiled when this happens. Whereas Keith Ellison is saying, fine, if there's somebody like this guy, go after him, but don't profile an entire community.
Yeah, and as I point out in my piece, there's been absolutely no evidence that anyone in the Cambridge Muslim community knew anything about this plot or this attack. And as I point out, odds are the brothers probably didn't tell anyone because people would have turned them in, just like the imam in Toronto turned in people, and they were able to thwart that rail attack. And as I saw a statistic while researching this piece, something like 40% of a terror arrest in the United States are spurred by tips from the Muslim community. This idea that, Fox News wants to start bugging, mosques and things like that. Again, when there's a right-wing extremist act of terror, bombing
it's always,
an abortion clinic, killing a doctor, after Dr. Tiller was murdered, I didn't hear anyone suggesting we need to start bugging, churches in order to root out, would-be terrorists or things like that.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's always a lone nut when it's, and as you say, even Dr. Tiller, that's an interesting point because that is part of a larger movement of anti-choice extremists. There was a guy we just talked about last week that said, something that sounded very close to advocating just killing the abortion doctors that took over for Dr. Tiller at that clinic.
Yeah, and I point out my piece. There's no connecting the dots, and it's not just Fox News, but it's most of the mainstream press. In terms of women health clinics attacks, January, May, September 2003, January, July 2004, January, May, July 2005, May, December 2007, 2009, five clinics were targeted with acid attacks in Florida, Wisconsin, New Mexico, Kansas. There's stuff out there that's happening, and it's right-wing extremists. But when we talk about it in the press, there is no, you know, no one connects the dots. There is no profiling that has to take place and things like that. There's two definite approaches.
And as you say, and in the wake of the, your larger point, of course, that in the wake of the Boston thing, you know, Fox News has gone, as you say, all in on the war, against Islam.
Ugly stuff. I mean, you know, you talked about Keith Ellison. I mean, Eric Bolling last week saying, you know, he's an apologist for Muslims in Congress and he's a very dangerous person. You know, he's not, the claim that he was an apologist for Muslims, to me, that to me is just amazing. He's talking about a religion. You know, he's not saying he's an apologist for, you know, Muslim advocacy groups or terrorists or Eric Bolling is complaining that someone speaks up for the voice of Muslims. I mean, can you imagine saying, oh, that's a Catholic apologist in the Congress or something like that? The bigoted approach has really, really became transparent.
I wish I could remember now. I'm trying to think which right-wing wackadoodle legislator had talked about, you know, we need to, you know, strengthen, you know, the wall or build, you know, so that Muslims don't infiltrate Congress. And I'm like, Keith Ellison's from Detroit. They're going to build a wall around Detroit to keep them out of Congress?
Well, they probably like to do that, too.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah, there's that.
Oh, boy. All right, Eric, great stuff as always. See you next week, honey.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, there he goes, Eric Bollert, Media Matters. Mm-hmm. All right, 17 minutes after the hour, we roll along on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Coming up after this commercial, I will be talking even louder.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Steffi.
Steffi. Minutes after the hour. Okay. All right. 1-800-STEP-1 to the phone
number.
Haven't
heard that in a long time.
Yeah.
Carrie in Boston. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
One thing for Chris there. Natick is in Metro West, not the North Shore.
Oh, okay. You're right. It's been a while since I've lived in Boston. I'm sorry.
The other thing that these right-wing nut jobs have not thought about is that Russia is supposedly worried about these two being jihadists. Why don't they arrest them?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing that's suspicious. Why were they allowed to travel back and forth so much if they were such a,
played.
Yeah, exactly. By the way.
And also, the whole Chechen thing is, they've reduced it to an Islamic idea.
It's way more than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nationalist thing. The Russians, they bombed Grozny to level it, pretty much.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more going on there than just...
That meets the eye, yes. Exactly. As is with Zubaydah, who we found out it was also on the terrorist watch list, was the new information. Yes. Oh, that's...
Azubaydah.
Okay, all right, good.
Azubaydah.
And they feel may have radicalized her song. Okay. Okay. All right. That was just silly. I'm telling you, we're going to get a lot of thanks a lot letters.
I know.
All day, people at work. What are you doing over there?
And if you want to torture your coworkers with that, we posted that up on your Facebook page. Yes, it's in the SoundCloud.
Okay, speaking of with the right-wing nutcases that he was referring to, Representative Gohmert, who is really such a...
Gohmert.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Mm-hmm. Not only did he attack the FBI and the Justice Department for bungling the investigation into the Sarnoff brothers before and after the bombings, he also made the accusation that members of the Muslim Brotherhood have infiltrated President Obama's administration and are influencing the U.S. to ignore radical Islam's war against
us. Sure. Again, it's not radical Islam in the case of Chechnya.
Right.
It's more complicated than that. But
and wait,
also,
there's...
you're an idiot.
Also, by the way,
you
all right.
are an idiot.
Speaking about the decision to read the Boston suspect his Miranda rights, Gohmert lashed out at Attorney General Eric Holder, saying, I guess with our Attorney General having spent more time before being AG trying to help terrorists than trying to corral what? Them, the first impulse was, let's get him to stop talking.
How does this guy have a job at all?
What? How do you make that accusation just out of, against the Attorney General of the United States based on what? Helping terrorists?
Okay. Can he get sued for that?
One would hope. Can I have my conspiracy music, please? The conspiracy theories percolating up to local party leaders and even the halls of Congress should be a warning sign to the GOP, writes John Avalon, excuse me. Mm-hmm. A few days after the Boston bombings, Stella Tremblay, we remember her. Stella Tremblay.
Oh. I remember her?
Is that who you are? What you do?
She is actually a New Hampshire state legislator.
That's right. Okay.
She went to Glenn Beck's Facebook page, as you do when you want to share your reasoned thoughts on things, to express her conviction the terror attack was, in fact, orchestrated by the U.S. government. Like too many enthusiastic dupes, the Republican representative was echoing conspiracy theorists from Glenn Beck and Alex Jones. That this is what he's saying. Avalon's still writing about, though. It's becoming what they're forming policy on.
Yeah.
It's not just she's an actual Republican legislator. She's not Tremblay part of a disturbing trend of conservative state legislators and congressmen entertaining conspiracy theories that are creepy and unseemly, coming from an average citizen, but a sign of civic rot when they start getting parroted by elected officials. The sickness is starting to infect the halls of Congress. They mentioned the Gohmert.
Uh-huh.
Who is really...
A Gohmert.
Really, truly. Do you think people just other congress people mutter under their breaths when he gets up?
Gohmert.
Shut up, Gohmert. Anyway, so he mentioned that on the... The remark came just a day after Republicans Jim Jordan of Ohio and Jason Chaffetz of Utah held a hearing to examine the procurement of ammunition by the Department of Homeland Security and Social Security Administration Office. The hearing represented a capitulation, if not an outright endorsement, of conspiracy theories promoted by, you guessed it, Alex Jones.
Oh, God.
At InfoWars, namely that the Homeland Security Department is stockpiling ammunition to use against Americans in a massive imposition of martial law. Breitbart, WorldNet Daily, those are Michelle Bachmann staffers have said she gets most of her news there.
But these aren't news sites.
This is what I'm saying. This is what John writes in Daily Beast. Perhaps the highest profile impact of conspiracy theories to date on national policies was the defeat of the universal background check bill, specifically the widespread claim that threats that closing the existing loopholes would be a first step toward a national gun registry with the bring in Hitler style.
Tyranny!
Hitler! Law. Confiscation to America. That,
and there
of course,
might be a national registry of your cars.
Would lead to martial law, as Mike Huckabee claimed on his radio show earlier this month.
Sure, once you start registering cars, it's a slippery slope.
A Daily Beast finish. As the steady diet of hyper-partisan media has seeded these conspiracy theories in the minds of party activists to the extent they are starting to shape policy debates. There is a cost to condoning extremism when it seems to benefit your team, writes John Avalon in the Daily Beast. Okay.
Great.
Michelle Bachmann and her news sites.
So we're being led by those people.
By that. Okay. Ricin guy has been arrested. The second guy, not the first guy, not Elvis impersonator, body organ harvesting conspiracy theorist.
Right. We have the guy with his own dojo who's been arrested.
Right.
Yes.
That guy.
Yeah.
Yes. Tupelo, Mississippi man has been arrested and charged in connection with the Ricin letters. James Everett Duchke. And a reporter.
You ever handled Ricin?
Hold on a second. No, I wouldn't recognize Ricin if I saw it.
Hmm.
But it usually comes in a jar labeled
Roni.
Ricin.
Ricin.
Roni. So
the Mississippi treat.
I mean, and it usually has a little skull and crossbones on the label, like skinny and sweet.
Right.
Yeah.
There was some story about somebody that was mailed a letter like that. Was it a relative of his that did the sniff test? She's like, this don't smell right. Who does that?
And then,
I mean, she's okay, but she's like, something in this letter don't smell good.
Don't smell right.
No, now that's really bad.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, God. Why am I bleeding from my eyeballs?
A neighbor. Not do the sniff test on snail mail. A neighbor of James Everett Duchke's.
He seems odd. It's just something about him.
I don't put it past him, not one bit.
Seemed like a nice feller.
Get little off his meds,
but
there's finally a neighbor paying attention, because usually every next door neighbor of a mass murderer is, seems like a nice feller. Seems a little, you know.
Now there's something wrong.
Kind of a loner. Seems like a nice feller. At least that guy, like, yeah, that guy did it.
Yeah.
That guy totally is a douche. She's way off. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
People seem to be talking over me, which is fascinating and rare and forbidden.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show.
Someone emailed me and said, I've been trying to find information about the bomber's mother on the interwebs. Mm-hmm. Is it Zubel.com, Zubel.net, or Zubel.ru?
Hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Hmm. Someone needs to lock down that domain name.
It's Zubidot.
Yes.
We just wanted it to be Zubel.com because it sounded funnier. But there's no L.
There's no L. The I kind of looked like an L. That's why I gave you that original pronunciation.
Just to make me look dumb. Okay. Well. speaking of making you look dumb, did we post this damnyouautocorrect.com stuff?
Not yet.
Speaking of funny things on the interwebs. No, because these are the new ones are the top 10 parent, son, daughter autocorrect failures. I'll just read one. Let's see. Do we have any stain remover or anything? What do you mean? What happened? I shook my... too hard and it exploded all over my clothes and the floor. I'm at work, Jake. This isn't funny. Call your dad. Holy crap. I mean Coke. It exploded when I opened it. Do we have a shout or a Tide stick or something in the laundry room?
That would be worse, the other thing.
Let's see. I just... my art teacher, and he loved it so much he gave me an A instead of a B. Wow, the kids you things do for grades these days. LOL. Sorry, Mama. I meant Drew. I drew my art teacher. That was awkward. Mother. Very. And there's a bunch of other ones I can't really read. I can't, there's not enough bleeps.
Mm.
For those particular.
Oh, there's a new thing going around the internet where someone is encouraging people to text their parents with the phrase, yes, it's $20 for 2 grams. And then the next thing you're supposed to text is, oops, that wasn't for you. And the reactions the parents give after that is hilarious.
Because we're wondering if Zubidot's going to go with the autocorrect.
Yeah.
If there are incriminating texts.
Even
that
more.
That's not what I meant. I did not mean jihad. Damn you, Siri.
That wasn't meant for you.
That's funny. All right. Yeah, I love that was the way it was described. Talking with her son about jihad vaguely. Something that sounded vaguely.
Yeah.
How can you speak vaguely of jihad? It's a pretty specific thing, isn't it?
Jihad J.
Right. In Pig Latin, perhaps.
Yeah.
Pig Latin pay.
All right. By the way, the president, once again, handsome, romantic, funny.
He has great comic timing.
At the White House Correspondents' Dinner, he was terrific.
I get it. These days I look in the mirror and I have to admit... I'm not the strapping young Muslim socialist that I used to be.
He's so cute. He, what was the...
I looked under my desk for the weapons of mass destruction. I ain't here.
Yeah, what? Speaking of compare and contrast White House performance.
Yeah.
Correspondence dinners. Okay, the president again.
But some things are beyond my control. For example, this whole controversy about Jay-Z going to Cuba. It's unbelievable. I've got 99 problems, and now Jay-Z's one.
Oh, by the way, guess who did not enjoy the White House correspondence dinner?
Oh, Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin.
Good Lord. She got all screechy on
this. Yeah, she said it was pathetic. Wow. She wrote that White House correspondence dinner was pathetic. The rest of America is out there working our asses off while these D.C. ass clowns throw themselves a nerd prom.
Yeah, she wanted to be one of those D.C. ass clowns.
Yeah.
Oh, she ran to be one of those.
By the way.
And she lost.
Who are you referring to as we're out here working our asses off? Yeah. You quit.
What, you mean we?
Your job. Yeah. You don't even have a job. What is that about?
You quit two jobs. You quit the reality show.
Yes. In her Facebook
post. She was fired from the reality show because the ratings just.
Right.
Well, there's that.
In a Facebook post, she expanded her criticism of the event, though she has attended related events in the past.
Uh-huh.
And presumably would have. Attended one and given a speech had she, you know,
been a DCS clown.
Right. What? Seriously, I just imagine my father rolling over in his grave. Really? A former vice presidential candidate used the word ass clowns? Really?
I don't think your father would have used that phrase.
Maybe in private.
Okay. Well, maybe about Sarah Palin. All right. I'm just speculating. I don't know. The president.
I know Republicans are still sorting out what happened in 2012, but one thing they all agree on is they need to do a better job reaching out to minorities.
I love this one.
And look, call me self-centered, but I can think of one minority they could start with. Hello?
That was cute. Oh, that was cute. His delivery was great. I just loved it. Yeah. Just saying. Okay.
What an ass clown. Mm-hmm. I'll take you in addition.
By the way, remember Sarah Palin said all of those lawsuits against her were frivolous? And
yeah.
Whatever.
Guess what? Former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin's request for attorney's fees in a lawsuit against her was denied by a judge.
She says no.
She had requested $22,000 in attorney fees in a case against her by activist Theodore Chip Toma.
Mm-hmm.
Toma had claimed Palin tried to silence his complaints about tourist bus traffic on the streets around the governor's mansion in 2009, an action he said had a chilling effect on his First Amendment rights. And, she had said that was frivolous. And
whatever.
Turned out not to be, and she doesn't get attorney's fees. Uh-oh, that means there's another reality show coming down the pike. Someone needs some cash. Okay, the president again, White House.
Of course, even after I've done all this, some folks still don't think I spend enough time with Congress. Why don't you get a drink with Mitch McConnell, they ask. Really? Why don't you get a drink with Mitch McConnell?
Plus, it's got to be disgusting because he has no
liver.
Lips.
No so lips.
Probably it's hard to even retain liquid.
A bucket for my spit. Spittle bucket.
I just picture that. I picture most of his beverages.
Say that again.
Spittle bucket.
One more time.
Spittle bucket.
Yes!
Don't you think? I just picture a lot of because he has a dearth of lips and sort of chin.
Yeah.
I just picture a lot of liquid just kind of.
I need to wear a rubber bib along my spittle bucket.
Okay, the president, one more time.
I am not giving up. In fact, I'm taking my charm offensive on the road. A Texas barbecue with Ted Cruz. Kentucky bluegrass concert with Rand Paul. And a book burning with Michelle Bachmann.
All right. And would you like to hear the fashion news?
Okay.
From New York Magazine. Oh, boy. I'm not going to be able to pronounce this designer. Michelle Obama wears Lacey Monique Lulier, as Tom Brokaw would say, to the White
Maybe
House.
Maybe Tom Brokaw should.
I mostly dress like this in a baseball hat, so I don't Monique Lulier.
Monique Lululemon?
Lululemon. And Monique Lulier.
Anyway, New York Magazine writing, damn, does she look good. This is a sexier look on her than usual, with a sheer lace panel over her décolletage and a molded bustier-style top. Hello, Michelle working it. Oh, hello, and this just proves I'm right. I'm always right about the bangs. Other observations, her bangs have grown out considerably and are now long enough to be sideswept, which makes for a softer look than the original blunt fringe, of which I was not a fan.
A blunt fringe.
I like the original blunt fringe.
I do not. I think they look better now. They're a little sweepy.
Sideswept.
A little sweepy. Right. I mean, not like a bad comb-over, like a sexy side swipe, side sweep. Mm.
Did you just call the First Lady sexy?
Yes, she is. Oh, my God, yeah. She's hot.
All right, fine.
All right, the president. The president at the White House Correspondents' Dinner again.
I'm also hard at work on plans for the Obama Library, and some have suggested that we put it in my birthplace, but I'd rather keep it in the United States.
Hi! See how he takes what they do and make it funny. Okay. Uh-oh.
I'm guessing Dennis Miller isn't writing for him.
No.
No.
I know CNN has taken some knocks lately, but the fact is I admire their commitment to cover all sides of a story. Just in case one of them happens to be accurate.
Oh! Oh! Snap!
Nobody laughed at the CNN table.
In an unrelated story, I'll probably be on CNN all week.
So. Oh, really?
I did not find that funny at all.
Neither did Aaron Burnett.
No. Okay, the president.
I'm out in California. We're at a fundraiser. We're having a nice time. I happened to mention that Kamala Harris is the best-looking attorney general in the country. As you might imagine, I got trouble when I got back home. Who knew Eric Holder was so sensitive?
Yeah. Well, they did that joke on... was it Colbert? I forget who it was, but oh, no, it was Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Eric Holder said, I'm right here. I'm standing right here.
All right. The president won last time.
We've had some difficult days. But even when the days seem darkest, we have seen humanity shine at its brightest. We've seen first responders and National Guardsmen who dashed into danger. And everyday Americans who are opening their homes and their hearts to perfect strangers.
And that's how he ended his news remarks.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah. And everybody says Conan O'Brien did a great job. Yeah. Here he is.
It's been several months since you were reelected, sir. So I'm curious, why are you still sending everyone 5 emails a day asking for more money? You won! Do you have a gambling problem we don't know about?
All right. In other news, over the weekend, Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer was hospitalized following a bike accident. Did you hear about this? A bad one. He underwent reverse shoulder replacement surgery.
Ah. Oof. That sounds bad.
Wait a minute. How do you reverse?
Yeah, I don't know.
Shoulder replacement surgery?
What, you put it in backwards? What?
Now look what you did.
No, he's like, no.
I can help you with that hump now.
Now I have to drive backwards.
Perhaps I could help you with that hump. What hump?
He's a worse bicyclist than George W. Bush. He's previously broke his collarbone in a bike accident in 2011, sustained broken ribs and a punctured lung. In a bicycle mishap in 1993. Mm. I wonder if he ran into the same Scottish policeman that George Bush did.
Bicycling isn't your bag.
Yes, maybe he needs to take up spinning or something.
I'm not a strong biker. Yeah. No, I don't know. That's his third bike accident.
Yeah.
All right. 45 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourselves for a shock.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 50 minutes after the hour. Does it irritate anyone else that they only fix the part of the sequester that inconvenienced them a little bit, air traffic delays? Yeah, because Congress people have to fly, and they had to wait a little too long for their flights. The president,
in their private jets.
Yeah.
Well, no, they don't have fly commercial.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm saying.
That's why they fixed it.
It affected them. And there was such public outcry. Obama chided the Republicans for approving a plan to ease air traffic delays caused by federal spending cuts while leaving budget cuts that affect children and the elderly untouched. I wonder if the Reverend Jim Wallace will have any thoughts on that.
Yeah.
When he comes in just a few minutes in the studio. But, in a deal expected to end long delays for flyers, Congress speedily approved a bill to revoke the furlough federal air traffic controllers. Doing this piecemeal is so ridiculous. The sequester is just such a... But as usual, some Democrats argued on Friday that in agreeing to ease the effects of a small portion of the cuts, Mr. Obama and Democratic leaders in Congress made it more difficult to accomplish their goal of replacing all the cuts with a mix of new tax revenues and different spending cuts. Now that public ire over long flight delays is resolved, Republican lawmakers will be less likely to compromise on replacing all the sequester cuts. So, I get that point because they never do anything because it's the right thing to do. They do it because they have to.
Because they do it because they're inconvenienced.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and there's so much public outcry. God. Representative Rick Larson, Democrat of Washington, said if you start nickel and diming our way out of the sequester, that at some point it begins to get in the way of doing something bigger to replace the whole thing. So hard to say if, they played the politics of this right, but that was one of the major things we said. Really? You're going to cut back on air traffic controllers? I mean, that's... Jay Carney on Friday called the bill good news for America's traveling public, but officials disputed the idea the GOP had won a victory, arguing that effects of the sequester would grow and that the FAA case showed that fixes are difficult to pull off. He said the president believes it's good news to eliminate this problem, but as I've said, he believes this is a Band-Aid covering a massive wound to the economy. So we'll see what happens with the rest of it. But By the way, one doctor of the United Cancer Specialists in Utah said, I would invite anyone in Washington to come look at my patients in the eye and tell them that waiting for a flight is a bigger problem than traveling farther and waiting longer for chemotherapy.
Yeah.
Which is one of the other effects of this.
People are dying because of it.
I can't believe.
Not just being inconvenienced.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't believe nothing has been done about the sequester yet.
Well, yeah. There's been so much other news. It's like, then that's like six things ago now. And people don't realize until it's something that glaring. That the
right.
Public's like, why am I waiting 4 hours and every single one of these flights are canceled? And I mean, it's, you know.
Or, you know, why isn't my grandma getting her chemo?
Right.
Yes. All right. Oh, by the way, I have a future wife.
You have many.
An off-duty U.S. Navy sailor wrestled a Dubai bus driver to the ground and beat him into submission after he tried to rape her at knife point.
It's a she.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. He pulled out a knife on her and tried to rape her. Prosecutor said she knocked the knife from his hand, broke it in two, bit him in the hand, forced him to the ground, and locked him between her thighs.
Just another Saturday night for me.
Really? It gets wild and...
But enough about Jim's behavior at my party Saturday night.
Oh, really?
Oh, what?
I missed that party.
No, don't be ridiculous. All right.
Was he getting handsy?
Kept my hands to myself.
Only, with his, only with his harmonica.
Kept my hands to myself.
Okay.
Very handsy with his harmonicas. All right. You know, we were saying lots of letters rolling in about the Chicago Sexy Liberal. Thank you so much. We love you, Chicago. There's one thing I have neglected. I need to have a diva rider because I have nothing. I require nothing. And look at what Nicki Minaj requires. Would you like to hear the list?
Absolutely.
Okay. Among the food items she requires backstage, dried cranberries, raw almonds, 24 bottles of Dasani water bottles, 12 room temperature, 12 on ice,
mm-hmm.
Snapple, Red Bull, assorted fruit juices, Simply lemonade, a fruit platter, cheese platter, deli tray, 3 packs of gum, salad with tomatoes, cucumbers, green olives, wishbone light Italian dressing, bumblebee tuna and water, and wheat or low-fat crackers, fried chicken, lots of wings.
Really?
In 3 12-piece buckets of spicy meat, no thighs allowed.
But look, this doesn't work. It doesn't fit on it. It's just, I can't work with this.
No thighs.
It used to be just cocaine. Now what? Boy, they're getting fancy.
Also requires 2 dozen pink or white roses, candles with the scent of baked goods, Paul's Mentholistus honey.
Where does one really pick up a candle?
Now she's messing with him now.
Contact lens solution with case, 2 space heaters, and a cool mist humidifier.
You don't have your own contact lens solution? What? Huh?
Where does one get a candle that smells like baked goods?
I've seen those.
Where?
You know, but whatever, Rite Aid, wherever. They have.
At Wicks and Sticks? At the mall?
Wicks and Sticks.
You can either get soft cotton blanket or, I don't know, baked, I don't know, who knows.
Or cheese. Or, yeah, cheese bread. What, huh?
Not cheese bread.
What?
Okay. Martha Stewart is looking for love, everybody. Look alive. It is so difficult to meet people. Martha Stewart, 71, admits that to going on Match.com, filling out a questionnaire, admitting that, yes, she used her real name, which is probably what...
Why she didn't get any.
Right. That right there is kind of a buzzkill.
Yeah.
She doesn't
seem like... By the way, I'm Martha Stewart.
Yeah. She doesn't seem like the warmest person. You're like cuddling up next to a cactus.
I'm just guessing a couple of guys are like, oh, she sounds... Yeah! Ah! Martha!
Oh, God!
Wow.
Oh.
They just, both of them just went up back inside.
Shunk. Shunk, shunk.
Never to be seen again. All right. Oh, dear. Could I have some scary music, please? LaToya Jackson says her late brother Michael is haunting
yeah.
the family compound in Encino.
Apparently, they're hearing tap dancing.
Right. Jackson said she has learned of a series of strange events at the home because it was always normal when he was
sure,
there.
Sure, right.
Now it's strange. Now it's weird.
Now it's weird.
I don't think
yes.
it's gotten weird. Leading her to believe Michael is still making regular visits. Source of the information, a family bodyguard. Right. He says it happens so much. Every single night the dog barks and he looks up at it. Could be a coyote or something, I don't say. And he looks up at this certain window and I said, that's where Michael's bedroom was. That's where he stayed. Contra Costa Times saying, right, didn't he avoid his family the last 20 years or so of his life? You think
yeah.
he certainly has better things to do in the afterlife. He barks, the dog barks at a certain time every night. He just keeps barking and looking at it. And then over in the other section of the house, he says he hears someone tap dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Contra Costa Times writing, maybe Sammy Davis Jr.'s ghost is lost.
It's true.
Maybe.
I got the wrong address, man.
He was so intrigued by the family's bodyguard's tale, she called on a top psychic to try and reach her brother.
Didn't she used to have her own psychic network?
Right.
I think she did.
Where'd all those psychics go? Skedaddle?
Yeah.
I was like, if Michael wants to talk, if he wants to tell me something, I want to know.
You know what would help? A Brazilian power crystal.
Call now to get six free minutes, and while supplies last, this Brazilian power crystal absolutely free.
Yeah, the writer says, I think he wants to tell you to stop saying crazy things to the media. That's probably what he...
Yeah.
Remember
Eddie
the, added. Right, and they add, remember the reality show where LaToya was tasered? I think we're finally seeing the effects.
All right, LaToya.
Okay. Oh, the stolen Pulp Fiction car was found 19 years later.
Thank God.
The classic Chevrolet convertible in Pulp Fiction has found nearly two decades after it was stolen. Huh. It took Harvey Keitel
a
long time
to clean it. Right.
Right. To explain how you clean it. That was the cherry red car that John Travolta's character.
That's right.
Yes, it was a little bit of a mess.
Yeah, they hit a bump and accidentally blew the guy's head off.
Oops.
As you do.
There is not enough gooby gone
for
Harvey Keitel to even help you with that business. 58 minutes after the hour, the Reverend Jim Wallace next, live in studio on The Stephanie Miller Show. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. This is a blessed event, I must say. We have talked to him many, many times. We've never had him live in studio. The very Reverend Jim Wallace with us in studio. Good morning, Reverend.
Wonderful to be here in your home base and meet your great team. This is fun.
Well, and because we're not just radio or TV, I can hold this up. He is the author of the brand new book, On God's Side, What Religion Forgets and Politics Hasn't Learned About Serving the Common Good. And we were saying it's a gorgeous picture of the Lincoln Monument at night.
Yeah, it's my favorite monument of all the monuments. And when I would tutor inner city kids, teaching them how to read, I would take them there. And I would stand with them and I'd help them sound out the second inaugural address. They were learning how to read, and I love to hear them say, with malice toward none and charity toward all. It's a great place to go.
Well, I mean, you say, and this is the quote you use right here on the top of the book from Abraham Lincoln, my concern is not whether God is on our side. My greatest concern is to be on God's side. And that's sort of what inspired this, right?
Isn't that the problem with religion and politics, to try to bring God onto our side? Lincoln flipped the question. And Lincoln would have said he didn't always know what it meant to be on God's side. But that was the right question, not try to make God be on our side. And so a little humility and a little deeper struggle with things is what the book's talking about.
Well, you say given the events of the past couple of weeks, obviously, there's no better time to recover the ancient and transforming vision of the common good, to transcend the nation's ideological political division and together find out what's right and what works.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems increasingly difficult, doesn't it, in these partisan times?
Well, I was in another city, and the waitress was very talkative. Why are you here, and what's the book? And she said, you know, we do need to take care of each other. We're not taking care of each other. My generation wants to do that. She was a performing artist in Chicago. And I think that's the basic thing this book is saying, that when you only take care of yourself, your group, your tribe, your party, your side, we'll all be in trouble before long. We have to learn to take care of each other. And that's in all of our traditions, religious or not. I mean, the second commandment of Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. But that's in all. It's in Judaism, Islam. It's in our democratic, secular tradition. So the foundation for the common good is, we do need to start taking care of each other.
Well, Reverend, it's interesting. You know, something that I think is lost is you talk about just the common good. The common good is about so much more than partisan politics. It grows out of our personal and family lives, our vocational callings, the mission and witness of our congregations, the moral power of social movements, the independent integrity of prophetic religious leadership in our public life. And I think that that's that phrase, the common good.
You just skimmed the book very well. Because it is about the choices we make. In fact, the epilogue is 10 personal decisions that we can make for the common good. A lot of times on the road, we're doing an 18-city tour here, really to spark a conversation about the common good. And a lot of folks are very cynical about Washington and Wall Street. I can't change that.
Right.
And there's reason to be skeptical about Washington and Wall Street. However, our choices can become social movements that can eventually even change places like Washington.
Well, you talk about, you've always been, this is why it's always amazed me that people like our friend Sean Hannity, you know, refer to you as liberal or, you know, a liberal. And most of the stuff you talk about is stuff that Jesus talked about, who to me would be considered a liberal socialist by Fox News today as well. I mean, doesn't that frustrate you?
Well, you know, the best conservative idea is personal responsibility. I think that's real important. The best liberal idea is social responsibility. So in the book I talk about, why are these two things at war? I mean, we need both personal responsibility in our own lives. I'm a dad and a Little League baseball coach, and those choices are really important. And we need to take care of each other. And so our friend, that's a wonderful way to use friend, Sean Hannity, he's never treated me like a friend, really, but I want to respond to him like a friend, even though he doesn't treat me like a friend, treat him the way I like him to treat me. But I think we need a much better conversation. What's right and what works is more important than going left, going right. In the book, I say, don't go left, don't go right, go deeper. Let's go deeper here and get something done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting way to look at it. And by the way, I will say you are very spiritual, but that you did not neglect to tell me that your team that you coach is 4-0. Not that that's important.
It doesn't matter, but they did win. I coached my son Jack's team yesterday, and they did win 10-3. Doesn't matter.
No, you're not keeping score.
No.
No. You're too spiritual for that.
Congratulations.
But, you know, I love the way this particular book, and you said something interesting. You said you think this is your best book yet, which is saying a lot because, you know, you've written a lot of great ones. But this particular one, you say, whether Democrat or Republican, Tea Party or Occupier, Christian, Jew, Muslim, atheist, our life together can be better. And that's the crux of this. Our life could be better.
That's the opening sentence of the book. Our life together can be better. And I think people are so hungry for that. I went on a sabbatical to write this book, so I had a discipline of not responding to the political news cycle by writing, speaking, or being interviewed for 3 months. That was real hard for me. I was in a monastery for a week, and I decided not to go down the hill to see who won the New Hampshire primary. and I really, I got up every morning, and I was had some quiet, some exercise, and I read and wrote all day, and at night I listened to the news cycle. The more I was disengaged and the more I listened, the more depressing it really got.
Right.
The vitriol, the hatred, the anger, the fear, the polarization, the paralyzation. And it struck me, we lost this ancient idea called the common good, which goes back centuries, really, yet it's more timely than ever. So to me, this is the most timely thing I've ever tried to write.
Well, in an interesting time when you look at this whole, you know, the Boston case where, you know, once again, we're talking about religion and you know, not profiling an entire religion by saying, look, many religions have misused religion, right? Have twisted religion to use it for ill purposes.
Well, there's fundamentalism in all of our religious traditions. Islam, Judaism, Christianity, I've been fighting that most of my life. And in Boston, you had such a stark example of two people who seemed to be very troubled, and their action was so horrible for the common good. I had a story yesterday, this young woman who was jogging, and she lost her foot. She's a dancer, you know, lost her foot. Mm-hmm. That's such a horrible story. And yet, at the same time, people were running toward the blast.
Yeah.
So that's the common good in a heroic way. So we always see how there are forces that are destroying the common good, like in the election season where the checks have replaced all the balances in our public life, for example. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, there are examples, the book's full of stories, good stories, hopeful stories about the common good. And the common good comes last to places like Washington, last.
Mm-hmm.
Has to happen in our own lives, neighborhoods, communities first, and then it can build social movements I talk about in the book that really can change things.
Yep. Well, I mean, talking about, you know, misusing religion, it's interesting. You obviously based this on an Abraham Lincoln quote, what inspired the book. And you know, I'm sure you saw the movie Lincoln, and I thought, there they are using the Bible to justify slavery. I mean, so it's that's what I'm saying. It's not one religion that has, I think, has cornered the market on misusing.
No, I often say religion has no monopoly on morality. As a person of faith, I want to say that over and over again. But where would we be without Dr. King and Desmond Tutu and the people who've used faith to spark movements that have changed the world? So it's faith is meant to change the world for the sake of other people, not just for the sake of ourselves.
Right.
And so I think the power of faith really is when it combines its energy, its hopefulness. around the country, I feel a lot of hopelessness. I really do out there.
Yeah.
People are coming to these events. They're just looking for hope. They're hungry for hope. So I often tell this great little league story that just happened last year. My team, they were 9-year-olds, and they were losing because 9-10-year-old league last year, young team. We lost 4, down 5-0 in the fifth game. Top of the order has gone down. Up comes the bottom. And two kids, due to no fault of their own, get on base. I mean, they walked, right? Up steps the worst kid on the team, Stefan. He can't play because his parents are internationals. He hasn't got a clue about baseball. Doesn't know a thing what he's doing. The ball hits the bat, and it goes into the outfield. And two runs score. Starts a rally. We win 11-5. Stefan's on second base. He's a Brit, so he's polite. He goes off to shake hands with a shortstop. I say, Stefan, you can't leave the base. He says, oh, I've never been here before. So at the end of the game, I give Stefan the game ball because he's the hero, right? And here's what the kid said. All the kids, my after game team meetings, they say, sometimes you get what you need from unexpected places. We all were necessary for this win today. We all were part of it. And what my star said, it just goes to show you can never give up on hope. So I've got a whole chapter in the book about this. Unexpected hope is what we found that day. And that's what people are looking for. I hope this book provides some of that.
Yeah, interesting. Jim, you say, one of the quotes in here, when making a difference in the lives of poor and vulnerable people is seen as a nonpartisan issue, then we make the most progress.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem, is we've gotten so polarized that, you know, immediately people seem to retreat to their positions when you make it a partisan thing, when that should seem so, I mean, doesn't every religion talk about that?
Everyone does, and it's the last thing to be talked about in the halls of power, with one exception. Right now, I'm going to predict nothing else is good as happening in D.C. It's any good. Nothing will happen except one thing. By the August recess, I believe we will have comprehensive immigration reform. I've talked to Republicans and Democrats, and this is one time, one place, where both sides, many of them, are trying to put the common good ahead. And what happens to 11 million vulnerable people ahead of their own? But both sides have said, looking at Lindsey Graham, Chuck Schumer, they both said, normally, we would do these kind of things in ways that help us win the next election. We're going to do this in the right way, bipartisan, and to solve something.
Well, and Reverend, it seems this time that, you know, the people that are, particularly some on the right, are trying to fearmonger after this Boston case.
Sure.
And, you know, we got to stop immigration reform now. And I think that you're right, that this has gotten too far. I mean, it doesn't even matter whether the Republicans are just doing it for political purposes because they looked at the Latino vote. I think, as you say, it still is for the common good.
Yeah, and I tell the story in the book about how this changed the faith community, where evangelical Christians who talk about the Bible a lot began to read their Bibles and were converted by their Bibles. When Jesus says, the way you treat the stranger, that's the category in the Bible, is the way you treat me. So all these evangelicals have been converted on this question, and then now their brothers and sisters are joining their churches. And that's converting Republicans and giving them the leadership they need and support they need to do the right thing here.
Yep, absolutely. Reverend Jim Wallace, what an honor. We are having you in studio here all, and I'm going to ask you about being a Matthew 25 Christian when we get back. 18 minutes after the hour, right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the happening spot.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 22 minutes
after
the hour.
Starting something from the other side. Right. In front of you, your sister.
Exactly. All right. Reverend Jim Wallace is live in studio with us, author of the new book, On God's Side, which looks unbelievable. What Religion Forgets and Politics Hasn't Learned About Serving the Common Good. And that's what we were just talking about before the break. You say recovering the common good requires transcending political ideology and leading on moral grounds. And you've spoken about this so eloquently before. Budgets are moral documents, right?
Mm-hmm,
I mean, I mean, that should be separate from what side of the aisle you're on, right?
Should be. I tell some stories in the book. I'm in an office of a senator, and he's a, you know, one of the Gang of Eight and very much involved in budget stuff. And I say, now, Senator, you and I could pick the 12 senators on both sides who could find a path to fiscal sustainability, couldn't we? He said, yes, we could. And they could observe our principle in our circle of protection, which says you've got to protect the poor and vulnerable. You don't reduce a deficit by increasing poverty. You can't make the people who suffer the most suffer more.
Yeah.
Yes, we could do that. But then all the interests would come in the room, wouldn't they, Senator? They would demand their expenditures. And the poor would be compromised, wouldn't they, Senator? He says, yes, that's what happens every time. There are three pharmaceutical lobbyists for every member of Congress.
Wow.
That's one industry.
Wow.
So who's representing, you know, moms and kids? And one of every six Americans are hungry in the richest country in the world. Poverty rate's highest than it's ever been. So from a religious point of view, this is the most important fact about politics, is the people who have been left behind. All our traditions say that a nation is judged for its integrity by how you treat the poorest and most vulnerable. That's right there in all our scriptures.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Before the break, I was asking you about that you are celebrating the new generation of Matthew 25 Christians, as you call them, who seek to carry out Jesus' mission for the poorest rather than pursuing comforts of heaven. They are inspired by one of the most challenging messages in the Bible, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Which was what was your conversion text when you were a young man?
One day, actually, that phrase came from Joe Scarborough, a morning Joe I was on. He said, Jim is right. There's a whole new generation of Matthew 25 Christians. And to me, I'd been kicked out of my church at 14 over the issue of race in Detroit. They said Christian faith has nothing to do with race. That's political. Our faith is personal. And I left in my head and my heart, and I was gone. I came back to faith because of this text, and that text is so radical. Let me tell you a quick story in the book here. We're in the Roosevelt Room with the president.
Right.
It's the debt crisis debate. It's a year and a half ago. And his team's there. Our team includes the Roman Catholic bishops, the National Association of Evangelicals, Salvation Army, hardly a religious left group, right? And the bishop says to the president, Mr. President, the text that obliges us, compels us to be here, does not say, as you've done to the middle class, you've done to me. It says, as you've done to the least of these, you've done to me. And he says, I know that text. I said, I know you do. Now, you need to exempt low-income people from this sequester. Mm. And we talked for an hour about that, and that's how it happened.
Mm.
You know, so this text really is meant to hold politics accountable to protecting those who have no one to speak for them.
Yeah. Well, we were just speaking of the sequester, Reverend. We were just talking about that earlier today, that they fixed just the flight delays. Just, I mean, which, again, important, but it's something that inconveniences members of Congress,
right,
that there's a lot of public outcry over, and yet there are so many of these cuts that are affecting so many people in horrible ways, and they're not doing anything about it.
And the longer it goes on, the more it's going to hurt poor and vulnerable people. And so, you know, they can't reach what they call the grand bargain, which just means find a way to get on a path. We all want fiscal sustainability long term. We got to find a way to control long term health care costs. That's fine. We can do that. But you can't do it in ways that compromise the survival of people who are struggling just to get by right now. So they could do this if they put their politics aside and just said, let's find a way to do this right. But they don't want to go to where the big money is. You know, that's always the issue.
Right. I mean, I quoted in a piece earlier this morning a doctor who said, you know, I want some of these congressmen to look me in the eye and say that, you know, them being inconvenienced or having a flight delay is the same thing as my patients not being able to get chemotherapy treatment or having to travel however many states away that they can't afford.
Or kids getting rationed for Head Start.
Right.
You know, kids are now in a lottery to see who gets Head Start. We're going to start losing more and more and more. And they could do this if they sat down. Sometimes I think the fake community ought to say, okay, we're inviting you all together, but you know, we're going to pray for you. We're going to pray for you and not let you out until you solve this.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what's infuriating, I think, to people, is that there is just this partisan gridlock that the whole theme of your book, they can't seem to get anything done for the common good.
You know, in the book, there's a letter from former members of Congress, Republican and Democrat, who wrote this powerful letter saying we didn't used to see each other as enemies. Adversaries, yes, but not enemies.
Right.
And we knew each other's spouses and kids and...
When my dad was in Congress, that's the way it was. Yeah. I mean, it.
So I'm working out one day in the gym, and I see Gabby Giffords, my friend.
Oh, wait, well, you're going to. That's a tease. We're going to have to do the rest of the story after the bottom here. 29 minutes after the hour. Right back with Reverend Wallace on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It's testing. They love every demographic. Colored people, broads, fairies, commies. Gosh, we've got to update these forms.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, live in studio with Reverend Jim Wallace, author of the new book, On God's Side. And he is out here. You are on a tour. Tonight we will be at All Saints Episcopal Church right here in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. And then you're on and on. The Claremont School of Theology, that's tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bel Air Presbyterian also tomorrow.
It's L.A. for 2 days.
Wow. Wow. All right.
It's fun to be live in your studio. We've been on the phone a lot, but see your team. Great team you've got.
Thank you.
This is fun.
Thank you.
Home base.
Go team. Reverend, you were telling a story before the break about you were working out in the gym.
Yeah, and I look, and the TV's on, and I look up, and here's my friend, Gabby Giffords, been shot in the head. I couldn't believe it. Was with her a week before, over New Year's, and, you know, she was one of the most least vitriolic people of all in all the Congress, and even she was vulnerable. Members of Congress actually call me to tell me they're afraid. And they say it's never been as bad as it is. They don't even talk in the hallways sometimes. So this, they're feeling like something has gone wrong as well. So how do we, that's why the common good to me is so important. Even conservatives who don't agree with me on policies, you know, Mike Gerson, who writes for the Washington Post and was George Bush's speechwriter, says kindly in the back cover of the book, Jim Wallace and I don't agree on all the issues, but his call to actively consider the common good couldn't be more urgent and timely. And I think we can, across our boundaries, ask the right question. What really is the common good here? Now, we won't always agree, but that's the right debate to have.
Well, you actually make a good point. You say we people of faith may be the ultimate independents, willing to challenge all political sides on behalf of people and issues that command our moral attention.
Well, you know, I know this may sound controversial on the radio, but left and right are political categories, not religious ones. And when you try to squeeze religion into them, like the religious right did,
right,
and sometimes people do on a religious left, it's much smaller, it distorts faith. And it can't, it's supposed to hold us all accountable. And I think we can ask tough questions of both sides. But you got to ask questions from the right framework. And in the common good, it's always what happens to those who are left out and left behind that is the ultimate test of our common good.
Well, you were saying it was one of the things that you're hopeful about is finally getting comprehensive immigration reform.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, it was mentioned, obviously, the opening of the George Bush Library, that he was behind this. So, I mean, in terms of what's partisan or not and what suddenly became partisan. And I think it's a step on a moral ground that we've stopped referring to human beings as illegals. I mean, you know, right, in this debate this time.
We've had two signs up at our borders, two invisible signs. One has said, no trespass. The other one says, help wanted.
Yeah.
And stuck between those signs are 11 million vulnerable people. And both sides are responsible for this broken system. And even the people who say they're for this haven't shown much courage in the past. So now the faith community stood up, rose up, and said, okay, let's show some courage here. And we found out that the American people are really for this, for fixing a broken system that's bad for business, bad for law enforcement, and rips apart families.
Yeah.
It's bad for our fabric of life. So now we've convinced the country, and Washington will catch up with the rest of the country. That's always what happens in Washington.
Yeah.
We changed public opinion on guns, and yet Washington can't fix this.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right, speaking of, you know, Gabby Giffords. And you know, I think you were talking about the loss of civility, you know, in terms of, I mean, it has been amazing in the wake of this, the background check vote that, you know, we've talked about radio hosts that told the Newtown families to shut up. And, I mean, it just, you really think, really, is this where we are in this debate?
You know, when children are supposed to bury their parents, when it goes the other way around, something has gone terribly wrong. Clergy are supposed to bury the older congregants. That's their vocation. When clergy are burying teenagers, something has gone horribly wrong. So we had this gathering 2 weeks ago on the Mall. We planted symbols of all those who have died since Newtown. Crosses,
yep,
crescents, Stars of David. We had to plant 3,264 crosses, crescents, and Stars of David. It was a very powerful visual scene. And I said to CBS News, all the senators should have to walk past all these crosses before they vote and take a breath, say a prayer, a moment of silence, and then vote. And I think the American people, 90% of us, wanted some common sense, background checks, trafficking anti-straw sales, and even that didn't pass. The majority of Republicans wanted this. The majority of gun owners wanted something done.
Somebody made the point earlier that, you know, as it relates to the Boston case, these guys would not have had any problem getting a gun, even though they're on the terrorist watch list. They did, you know, I mean, it seems to be the one thing that we just can't touch.
And inner city pastors who, you know, I've seen dead kids on the street, okay? Mm-hmm. I've been at funerals burying teenagers. Inner-city pastors will say it's the straw sales, trafficking, that really, really changing that would help save lives. So no gun laws are going to be perfect or solve all the problems, but we want to move in a better direction. And I want to be controversial here and say when gun manufacturers are supplying most of the money for the gun lobbies, what we're facing here in Washington, D.C. is the power of gun runners. They're gun runners, and they've bought Washington.
Yep.
And we're going to have to change this for the common good. I think because parents are going to be central here, parents and pastors may change this long term.
Yep.
Parents and pastors.
Here's my favorite thing is what you consider to be controversial for talk radio. That's how sweet you are. Kim in California, you're on with Reverend Wallace. Hey, Kim.
Good morning. Hi.
Good morning.
In order for me to ask my question, I have to give you a little bit of background. So, Reverend, I'm a 55-year-old female who stopped working a year and a half ago and just decided to file for permanent disability. Mm-hmm. I, of course, got that, but what doesn't come with it is any kind of medical care at all. So I'm on my own in that regard, right. And my medical care is a lot because of it. Mm-hmm. And I am literally starving, and I'm wondering. I went to get a hot meal from a church that always served them before last week, and they don't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. This list was from the Salvation Army, and I was just in tears. I'm starving. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you would talk to those same legislators that you were with a year and a half ago, asking them the same questions, because California is now going to be cut even more. People on unemployment, and I don't know how they can cut no medical care for people like me. You can't cut it because there isn't any. So, you know, would you talk to those same legislators the same way? I'm really hungry, and I just need some help.
Kim, your story, I wish your story and stories like yours could be told. Remember recently a senator changed his view on issues because he learned his son was gay?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What would happen if the senators had sons or daughters or family members who were poor, who were starving, as you say you are, in your situation? They don't.
They don't because they have influence on getting those people help. They have influence. They can say, my dad's a senator, and that'll give them what they need.
Well, they live in a different world than most ordinary Americans.
Kim, where do you live in California, can I ask?
Concord. You were talking about Contra Costa Times earlier. I'm in
Northern
that,
California.
That.
In Northern California,
Yeah, Concord in Contra Costa County.
Okay. Hold on the line. I want Travis to get your information, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Hang on. All right. Myrna in Wisconsin, you're on with Reverend Wallace. Hey, Myrna, go ahead.
Hi, Reverend Wallace.
Hi.
I'd like to get your thoughts on why you think heartlessness has become fashionable. And I see this as a long-term issue, not just in this country, but also I have friends in the UK that are, you know, experiencing the same kind of attitude of, I've got mine, you know, hell with you, excuse me. I'm just wondering, because I've seen this as a steady progression, and it seems in relation to the previous caller and your comments that it's almost impossible for people that aren't affected personally to have empathy for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I'll stop.
Yeah, thank you, Myrna. Yeah, I mean, people have you know, been talking about this, Reverend. Is that where we've come in empathy in this country, where, you know, you can only understand it if it happens to you or your family?
Well, selfishness is really not a virtue. And there are people even in Washington who celebrate someone like Ayn Rand, who expressed her hostility to Jesus, for example. And selfishness isn't a virtue. And there are some people who don't even believe in the concept, really, of the common good.
Well, you must have been, I have to say, this last election, you know, the last presidential election was such a stark example of what you're talking about. I mean, obviously, Paul Ryan is known as being an aficionado of Ayn Rand, but I mean, just all of Mitt Romney's comments, right, about the 47% and the moochers and however, I mean, that whole debate was just so stark, wasn't it?
It was, and I write a lot in this book about this issue of money and politics. When senators tell me that they have to raise $20,000 every day to get reelected, whose calls do you take? Mm-hmm. Who do you have lunch with? And they say it with a weary voice. They'd rather read the bills they're voting on. They'd rather engage more of their constituency. But we have a political system now that is so insular from ordinary people. I was talking to a pastor the other day, a conservative pastor. He said, well, it's this dependency thing I'm worried about. I said, what do you mean? Well, food stamps. I said, okay, did you know that most people who get nutrition help, food stamps, are families with a full-time worker in the house. Families with a full-time worker, they just don't make enough to get by.
Yeah.
He said, oh, you should get that out.
Oh, no. Well, why don't they just inherit $1 million?
So,
what?
So Kim's story, the stories we're hearing this morning, yeah, are the stories. Yeah, I remember one time I was in Washington, D.C. for another budget battle and another president. And we didn't make headway, and we finally sat on the Cannon office steps and had a prayer vigil. And the members of Congress were looking at us out of their windows, and we did it. And we said, "Come walk with us, come walk and meet the people who need the food stamps. Come walk with us, meet the kids whose Pell Grants are giving them a chance to go to college for the first time. Come walk with us and find the people who are choosing between health care and heat in their homes. You don't know them, we know them. Come walk with us." They didn't come walk with us. We were all arrested on the Cannon office steps, put in jail. Yep. And we were Christian, Jewish, and all the rest. And in jail, there were all these theological conversations. It was really wonderful. And I said, that's what I mean by interfaith. You all get arrested for your faith and discuss theology in jail.
There's no atheists in foxholes or jail. Okay, 46 minutes after the hour. We started this segment talking about the Boston case, and I opened the book by accident to How to Overcome Religious Extremism in the Middle East and the United States. We're going to talk to Reverend Wallace about that when we get back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call Stephanie now. She's easy. 1-800-STEPH-12.
Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
Really? Really in front of Reverend Wallace? All right. 51 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere to talk to Reverend Jim Wallace, author of the fabulous new book, On God's Side, and the official preacher of the Stephanie Miller Show.
That's right.
You say the book is aimed at the none-of-the-above demographic. What do you mean by that?
Well, the largest growing religious affiliation in the country is people who check none-of-the-above. But they're not really, they believe in God, most of them. They just don't want to affiliate with religion because of what they see. So I love the nuns. Now, first, of course, I love the other nuns, too. When I go out and speak at these
Christian... The ones on the bus and the nuns.
When I go out to these Christian colleges for years, really conservative places, there'd be two rows of nuns in their habits. I say, sisters, why are you here? They say, well, we're local. We heard this is, you were coming here. It's a conservative place. We thought somebody should have your back.
Wow.
So I had nuns for bodyguards for years.
That is awesome.
But that's the N-U-N-S. This is the N-O-N-S. And I think a lot of young people are really hungry for the common good. They don't see religion doing that, and they want to give their lives for it. Here's what happens when people of faith actually do and say what their faith says they should say and do. People are first surprised and then attracted. So I'm talking about things that I think could reach a lot of the nuns who don't want to affiliate with religion but are really hungry to give their lives. They want their lives to make a difference in the world, and that's what really faith's all about.
Yeah, interesting. Reverend, we were talking when we started the show about, obviously, what just happened in Boston and religious extremism. You have a whole piece in here about how to overcome religious extremism in the Middle East and the United States. Talk to us about that.
Here's the mistake that we make, where this whole Boston coverage, who did it and how can we get them? You know, who did it, how can we smash them? Religious extremism is not best smashed from the outside. It's better undermined from within.
Yep.
And so in all our traditions, authentic expressions of faith, will do more to undermine fundamentalism. For years, literally, I would have the literal sons and daughters of the religious right leaders seek me out at night after I was speaking someplace, and they lost their faith, you know? So how do we talk about authentic faith as a way to combat the extremism? That's what's going to work long-term. Not smashing it from the outside helps them to recruit more people. You know, when we respond in ways to evil, that really extends it and expands it and hurts more innocent people, it recruits more terrorism.
Sure, they feel persecuted and then they lash out.
So responding with a different, I talk about surprising our enemies in the book. It's how do you surprise them with a different kind of response than wars of occupation?
Well, and I loved all the imams that spoke out after this and said, this is, you know, this is not what the Quran preaches. You know?
And also it's worth noting that when these violent actions are done by white people, like Oklahoma City, it's always the individual who's the problem.
Right.
But when it's done by people of color or Muslims, it must be all of them. So we collectivize the response with people of color or Muslims. And so the book talks about wonderful stories of how when the mosque was burned in Missouri or Sikhs attacked in Wisconsin or hateful signs in the New York subways, we worked with local people and put up these billboards and signs which just said, love your Muslim neighbor, love your Sikh neighbor, and it changed the whole conversation. There's stories in the book about how ordinary people responding differently can change the whole conversation about this in the country.
Reverend Walsh, we've been talking about gun violence, and you know, you've been after Newtown speaking about that as well. I wanted you to listen to a little of this just because everybody's talking about it, but it's just talking about people that are finding creative ways to try to change, you know, hearts and minds. And this is a mom who, her name is Heather Whaley, and she's a, you know, one of the mom groups, Moms Against Gun Violence, whatever. But she called a bunch of senators to express her, you know, disapproval with their vote. When she got to Senator Bob Corker's office, she actually got a person. And take a listen.
Your county of Tennessee for my records, please.
I'm in Bristol.
Okay, thank you.
And I would like to tell Senator Corker that on behalf of all mentally ill individuals in America, I want to thank him for protecting my Second Amendment rights.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I'll certainly let Senator Corker know that message
can,
for you.
Can you repeat it for me, please?
That on behalf of yourself and the mentally ill people of America, you would like to thank the senator for supporting your rights.
Yes, and can you add that just because I have been deemed by a court to be a dangerous, paranoid schizophrenic doesn't mean that I shouldn't have the right to buy more guns. Don't you agree?
I can send my Senator Corker know your message for you.
But do you agree? Don't you?
I will let Senator Corker know that for you. I'm just here to reflect his views, not my personal views.
Well, that's his views, right? He supports my rights as a paranoid schizophrenic to not have to suffer the indignation of being turned away from a background check.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I'll let him know that for you.
Do you, can you tell me if he agrees with me?
His vote does reflect that.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Anyway, people finding, you know, creative, funny ways
to break through
the
clutter.
Right, and that's been all over the internet. But, you know, just one of the many moms, among other people out there, that are outraged. I mean, Reverend, what do you, I mean, this is such a larger problem that does encompass mental illness, encompasses guns. I mean, why are we killing each other at this rate? I mean, there's so many components to it.
Well, her story reminds me of, I was in Chicago recently, and the pastors, urban black or Hispanic pastors, who are burying teenagers, don't think about the Second Amendment when they're doing the funerals. They're thinking about other things. So how do we get back to the human faces? That's the issue here. The human faces here, not just the politics and the money. And so that the common good always is about what happens to our neighbor? In the book, it's all about these lawyers who ask Jesus the question, who is my neighbor? In the Gospels, I think they're all Washington lawyers who ask him this question. And they're not saying, who is my neighbor? I want to help. They're saying, who is my neighbor? I want to avoid responsibility. And all the Gospel stories are extending who your neighbor is. You know, what does it mean to love your neighbor? Do you even know your neighbors? How about your poor neighbor? You don't know any poor neighbors. You're not going very far because they're never far away. Your undocumented neighbor, your gay neighbor, Who are your neighbors that you're not paying attention to? And finally, paying attention to them is better for us all. That's really what will work long term.
Yep. Beautiful stuff. I live in Hollywood, so my gay neighbor is not very far away.
But, right up the hill from me.
Pretty close, yeah. Right in my house, in fact. Reverend, just another terrific book. On God's Side is the book, What Religion Forgets and Politics Hasn't Learned About Serving the Common Good. What a pleasure to have you live in studio.
Well, it's great to be here, and I'm going to apply this to the economy, to government, all the stuff that are big questions, but it starts with our own personal decisions.
Yep.
Love to be here.
Thank you, sir.
My blessing.
See you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.